This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And oh boy, do I have a wonderful story behind this book. Today I am so thrilled. I can't stop laughing. I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, McCracken Poston Jr. And the name of his book is Zenith Man. Are you there, Mr. Poston? Hello? I can't hear you. Hello? Oh, no, please. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
There's an echo.
I have to talk to you. Okay. This book is fantastic. I just want to tell you that. Right from the start. Oh, it's difficult when I can't hear you, but
I want to
tell you that I think this book is just fantastic. It is called Zenith Man, and as I said, I think I have not enjoyed a book this much for a long time. I mean, I love this book. Please tell
Thank
us
you.
About it.
Well, my name's McCracken Poston Jr., and I am in Ringgold, Georgia. That's just below Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I have known Alvin Ridley most of my life. He went to high school with my sister. He was always considered a little odd. My father did business with him and bought our first Zenith TV color set, which I wore the tuner knob off, and Alvin came to fix it when I was about 13 and gave me a stern lecture on how to turn a TV knob. But years later, I find myself representing him. He was accused of keeping his wife in their basement for almost 3 decades before killing her. We were all wrong about him. And I began to represent him somewhat reluctantly, but my father encouraged me. And as it turned out, I began to work through some of Alvin's issues, and we found a way to win the trial. And only 3 years ago, over 2 decades after his acquittal, I learned that he is on the autistic spectrum, which explained everything about our difficulties. So my book is a cautionary tale. There's 5.5 million adults with autism that have not been diagnosed, and their interactions with police and the courts could very easily be misjudged and misinterpreted, and unfortunately, they would not benefit from that lack of understanding.
Well, what's wonderful about this book, you're telling your story and making it so fascinating. I was enthralled. Now, one of the things that I always look for in a book, there's humor, and you are able to, when you write about your area of the country, you bring it to life. It's fantastic. And right now, at this point, I think this book came out at the perfect time, because everybody in the country is interested in lawyers from Georgia. And I mean, people are just...
I, I, I know all of the parties that you're seeing on TV in Atlanta. They're all friends. I know them all. I've worked with them in one way or another.
Well, that's what I figured.
It's a small world. The Georgia bar is a small, small world.
I think what you've done here with this book, bringing this story to the people, and I think now I'm going to tell you, this came out at the perfect time. Everybody's interested in lawyers from Georgia. And I don't like making lawyers richer, because I've made a lot of lawyers rich over the years. But in this case, I'm happy to promote this book because I think it's so well written. I really hope that people will read it, because you learn this whole idea of the autistic spectrum and what people don't know. And as you write about Alvin Ridley here with such sensitivity, there's just so many things that I love about what you did with him and how you yourself, you are such you have to be such a lovely person. You treated him. I love how you tell about how you told him he could just drop in your office, because I think that was so nice.
My father's explanation of Alvin was he marched to the beat of a different drummer, and he gave Alvin my telephone number, which caused middle of the night screaming calls, kind of having Alvin having a meltdown. And I reminded him of how private he and his wife were. And I said, you know, at least respect my privacy, but what I'll give to you is you don't have to make an appointment. You just drop in anytime. I'll stop what I'm doing and see you. And that worked, because Alvin was paranoid. He didn't want people to know where he was going to be at a particular time. So it was just one of many, many accommodations that I made. And this book is humorous, it's all at my expense.
It is. But it just shows I fell in love with you. I did. I thought, my gosh, this guy is... It's so wonderful just to think of something like that. And then I love when you brought Alvin into your office and you get a call. And is this a true call? I mean,
this is
a call from a congressman.
True. Everything in this story is true.
Oh, well, you have to tell
the
us
book
about
begins,
this call.
The book begins with my complete and utter defeat in my offer for Congress. And it was a low point in my life. I was going through a divorce, losing a congressional race, and had a presidential appointment yanked away from me. So I was at a very low point. Suddenly, about 11 months later, I'm representing Alvin Ridley, the scariest guy in town. But a guy who I realized was being misinterpreted. And, of course, we now know that was the autism. But Alvin, and I later learned his wife, for every ounce of suspicion they had about local government, and they had pounds of suspicion about local government, there was a counterweight of hope about the federal government. So I'm sitting in my office with him one day, and my secretary says, "The congressman called." Well, that was the guy that whipped my butt just less than 2 years before. And I took the call thinking maybe it would impress Alvin that I'm getting a call from a congressman. And he says to me, "Keep Alvin Ridley away from my congressional offices." So I didn't know how to break this to him. So I decided that misery loves company, and I told him that it was because of me that the congressman hated me so badly that if either one of us showed up at his office, he would have me arrested. And I promised Alvin, at the end of this, if you will just help me help you and stay away from the congressman's office, I will take you and show you where he lives. And that satisfied him, because I wasn't trying to order him around. I wasn't trying to tell him. I was just kind of giving him some hope for the future. Of course, I never did, and I explained that in the acknowledgement as well.
I know. But that you thought of it, that you thought of breaking the news to him. I thought it was, I laughed my head off.
Patsy, it motivated me. I was really down because I wasn't getting anywhere with this guy. And the congressman's call motivated me. I was back in the game.
You certainly were. It just took off from there. And I must say, I also got a kick out of Benita J. I love that name.
And she came to the trial to look after Alvin, even after she left our employment. She was one of Team Alvin that kept him in the courtroom, which was important because he was known to bolt.
There are so many things in this book that are just, it's the story, of course, of somebody going on trial for murder is, you know, it's so serious, but in between everything else, and your daddy just raised a good kid, because you just have this lovely, charming Southern humor that, I mean, you have everything in this book from, I love the spider, the giant spider.
Oh my!
I love
true stories. True stories, all true.
You don't expect this, you know.
We infested the first courtroom with roaches, and we had to leave and go to the old courtroom in the old courthouse. And that was the last place Virginia Ridley had been seen in public 27 years before. So it was eerie.
You write about it so beautifully. And I love, and I think the way that you bring out and explain Alvin in so many ways. I love, tell us about P.T. Key Eyes.
Part of the state's theory of how she died was based only on the presence of these tiny broken blood vessels around her eyes and mouth called petechia or petechial hemorrhaging. Well, first day we heard it was at the preliminary hearing, and Alvin is looking very official with his notepad and pen, and I've got mine. I'd never heard that word before. So I wrote it down the way I thought it sounded, and I looked over at his pad, and he wrote P-T, and then key, K-E-Y, and then eyes, E-Y-E-S. And he actually was closer than I was about the pronunciation.
And it's so clever, and it shows how his mind was working, you know, for all the things that people saw sometimes on the surface. There's this depth also to him, and when he does things like some of his notes, some of his comments, of course some of his opinions of the jurors, the potential jurors.
Oh my gosh, that was let me tell you, Alvin has always had a dignity about him that I recognized early on. His hair was always perfect, and he was always clean shaven, but the rest of his life seemed to be falling apart. And so I really also realized how smart Alvin is. He was a fantastic TV repairman in the era of picture tubes. So like many people with autism, he was laser focused on those things and was a superstar in that field. Problem is, the technology changed. And as Alvin laments, people just throw their TVs away now.
Well, you know, it is. It's wonderful to see the way that you portray him, because as the town saw him in one way, so many people were afraid of him. They didn't want him around them. And yet you bring out all of this, the depth of him. And we do understand. I think people who read this will look around themselves and say, well, I know somebody who might be, you know, on that spectrum, and perhaps, you know, treat them with more respect and more understanding.
The wonderful thing about this book is, and Alvin's diagnosis, it has made the community warm up to him. He just turned 82. I'm about to take him to lunch, as I do twice a week, very religiously, on Mondays and Thursdays. It's very exacting, and that's his rules. But the readers have been touched, and they will tell me, because I'm writing it chronologically, I only revealed the autism diagnosis at the very end, because that's when I learned it. And that's really what made the book form in my head, because we have 5.5 million adults with autism that are undiagnosed, and they could end up in the very same straits as Alvin was. But they are recognizing that he's autistic as they read the book before I knew. I'm afraid I lost you, Patsy.
Going back to the idea of how he could be so observant and so very, very insightful, when we talk about the jury pool that you had to face, 111 people, and he right away spots somebody who he thinks doesn't like you. I thought that was so, funny.
My ego, having been in the state legislature 4 terms, where I thought I did everybody such a good job, I could not understand that woman would have anything against me. Turns out she did.
But yeah, exactly that. Well, you had, I mean, that was difficult to pick that jury, because so many people knew so many people. Or tell us about the doctor who was one of the witnesses, had actually been the doctor who brought some of those people into the world.
Oh, well, the Doc Stevenson had passed years ago, but we used some of his prescriptions and writings, because Alvin never threw anything away. He had prescription bottles that were empty up to a point in 1977, and then there were filled prescription bottles. Now, Alvin wouldn't let me in his house for over a year, and we were 5 weeks away from trial, and my parents sent a turkey plate to him for Thanksgiving. I did not want to take it, but I did. And he opens up his home to me. And that's where I found over 15 to 20,000 writings by Virginia Ridley. It turned out, in addition to her epilepsy, which is how she died, she had a condition called hypergraphia, which compelled her to write. And Alvin had made a shrine of her writings on one wall, almost covering the whole wall. And when I found it, I knew we had a defense, because we could explain that this woman didn't want to get out. She liked her privacy. She wrote about it. And, of course, Alvin says, "You can't have it. That's all I've got left of her." So I had to fight him over that. First, we had to pray about it. And I tried to get, one of those, give us a sign real quick, God, if you don't want me to use it. And then, you know, it ended. And I said, looks like God wants us to use it, Alvin. And he says, I'll think about it. But then I had to give him money to use it. He's very transactional.
And can you imagine, if you hadn't gotten in there and hadn't found this, everything would have been a mess.
Well, it was the mystery of Virginia, of why she didn't get out, would have never been resolved, and that was bothering everyone. You know, and because her surviving siblings, and I don't blame them, they were, you know, they were very suspicious of why their sister cut them off. But the writings revealed that she really did not want to see her family. She was mad at them for interfering in her marriage.
And this book is also so much about your life and your growth as a person and what you went through. As you said, it started off with you losing a campaign and being down, but you certainly worked your way up from there.
Well, my developmental editor, Bonnie Hearn Hill, she told me, she said, you know, you need to include your life in this. And she kind of got it early on. And I started doing that on a 90,000 word contract. I did what they call a vomit draft, and it was 177,000 words. And so hacking that away was the hardest part of my writing process because I had to kill storylines. But a lot of it included growing up with a wonderful but alcoholic father. And again, sweet man, never abusive, but just sadly alcoholic. And that affects you as a child, even under those better than a lot of people have circumstances. So a lot of that I was working through. And my father actually sobered up, and the last 10 years of his life, he was mostly sober. And that trial was the first thing in my life that he attended that he was not drinking. And so it was a bit of an overwhelming thing for me to have him in the courtroom sober.
Well, it's going to be a wonderful, you know, Zenith Man, first of all, I'm sure, I don't know if somebody's optioned it yet. I hope that somebody has already optioned it. It's going to be absolutely so much fun to see this go into production and being, I want a, like a 6-part streaming series because there is so much in this book.
Can you let your listeners know that there are two books by this title out there? The real deal is the one with the kissing couple on the cover. That's Alvin and Virginia in 1966 at a photo booth at a little amusement park we've still got up here.
Oh, it is. When I first heard about the Zenith Man, I had thought when, you know, your PR people sent me the information, and I said, oh, I thought, you know, this is like a long time ago. And then, of course, once I get the book, I discover it's, you know, completely different. But it was unexpected for me. Now, I know that the trial garnered a lot of attention, a lot of publicity. You were in a lot of newspapers, and then you had something on television. I had missed all of that. I don't know. I wasn't particularly interested in, I guess, at the time. So we rode
the wave of the true crime revolution because they replay that Forensic Files episode every month for 20 plus years, but none of these earlier tellings reveal Alvin's autism, which to me explains everything.
It does. It really does. It's and I think the way you've written about him, the things that you tell about him, and whether, you know, it's just, I thought it was so wonderful how you bring him to life in the book, and I'm so happy that you know, and we're all happy, I think, knowing that you're going to have lunch with him. I think that alone makes everything great. I don't want to, you know, give away things too much in the book. There's so much to discover. I didn't even mention the cats, which I think I don't want to mention that because I want people to discover that. I do want to mention Lori, who actually plays a very big part in the book.
She does,
and I thought it, as much as we see you, you know, developing over the years, the period that you're, you know, working with Alvin, we also see her, and I thought that was I like that so much. So, just everything about the book. It's funny. It's beautiful. It's touching. It makes you. I mean, you are truly, truly a fascinating man, and I don't know who's going to play. Well, I don't know who's going to play you in the streaming series that I know they're going to do. I know I will help promote this book because I think this is the perfect time. Everybody is interested, as I said, in Georgia lawyers. It's like it's nonstop right now.
Well, I'm very honored, and I will always just point to the book. Because I fear what screenwriters would do to the story, so I can always just say, "Well, the book, the truth is in the book."
Well,
the truth is better than fiction.
It is. It's so good. I got so many times as I'm reading it, and I'm stopping, and I'm saying to myself, "Oh my goodness, this is so good! It's such brilliant writing, such fantastic writing," and I love a book that makes me also, I mean, gives me a real story, a real depth into a subject, but also that makes me smile, whether it's writing about your 100 CD jukebox or whatever you write about. And I think that you have here a winning book. And I will do everything I can to promote this book because I think people will I think it's a book that will sort of put things in perspective because as a lawyer, I think we need to know that there are great lawyers like you out there everywhere, but also lawyers with a heart and a soul and a really, really important thing for us to come away with is that we can admire a lawyer. So that's why I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. As you said, the book is called Zenith Man, and then there's this subtitle, Death, Love, and Redemption in a Georgia Courtroom. And I'm glad you put Georgia right there on the cover, so maybe people will see it, and they'll say, okay, we can find something about a Georgia lawyer.
Well, and there's the mysterious couple on the front page, on the front cover.
Exactly, and it's by McCracken Poston, Jr., and I got a kick out of your name because I said, well, McCracken is cracking me up.
Well, my father, I'm named for my father. I'm his only son. He was born in 1923, and he would be called a preemie. The doctor came by and said, this one's not going to live. So my grandmother unloaded these family honorary names on him, and he lived. So my full name is McCracken King Poston, Jr.
Oh boy, that's a great name. Perfect for a Southern gentleman, a Southern lawyer, and I hope you know what you have to do. Here, I'm gonna promote this book so much that when you get this streaming deal, I want you to tell them to let me come and be an extra in the courtroom because
I'll try to write that into a contract because I love your enthusiasm.
You're a lawyer and you know how to do it. It's sometimes just a little thing like that can really make a difference. So I want to be in the courtroom. I want to wear a hat. I can just see myself. I would love to look very Southern and this would be fantastic. So,
well, let me just tell you, the Forensic Files episode has a juror talking about the roaches coming out of the suitcases that Alvin kept the evidence in.
Okay, I will be in that courtroom. I think it will be. I will jump up on a chair. You have written a fantastic book. Again, it's
Thank
Zenith
you.
Man. And I hate to stop talking to you. I can talk to you all day.
Well, maybe we can come back on later.
How about that? How about we're going to arrange something because I need to talk to you. Anyway, thank you so much, McCracken, King, Poston, Jr. My goodness,
thank
what a
you,
wonderful
Patsy.
Name.
Thank
I think
you,
you're
Patsy.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And I will have you back. I will definitely. And say hello to Alvin, okay?
I will. I don't want to be given up to the Lord.
That's it. Okay. Have a wonderful, wonderful lunch.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow. Sometimes you get a book just at the right time. I needed something. I needed this book. And speaking of books that I need, it's running a little bit late. I'm sorry. So I'm going to skip commercials if you don't mind today, people. I will talk about my wonderful sponsors. I want to go straight to my next guest because, as I said, I'm running a little bit out of time. And I want to talk to her because she is just lovely and she's written two books. So is she there, Big Ed? Okay.
Here.
Satine Abaza. Hi, Satine.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, fine. Well, I'm running a little bit late because I had this wonderful guest on. I don't know if you got to hear a little bit about it. He's really a great guy, and I wanted to talk to him, but I also wanted, because it's March and it's time for Nowruz, I wanted to make sure that I got a chance to talk to you about your two beautiful books. One is called Looking for the Eid Moon, and the other one is The Ramadan Drummer. And they are so beautifully illustrated. And tell us about you as a writer and how you came to write these children's books. And we'll talk about, we'll also mention both of the illustrators. So for the first one, Looking for the Eid Moon, you have an illustrator, and her name is Sandra Aid. A-D? How do you pronounce her name?
That's correct.
Okay, so I always like to mention the illustrators because so often people will interview, someone who's written a children's book and not mention the illustrator, which doesn't seem very fair. So
yes, absolutely.
So tell us about yourself, because you have a bachelor's degree in computer science and I think an MBA, I don't know, in software too?
That's correct. So first of all, I want to say thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your show. I am an American Syrian. I grew up in the United Arab Emirates, and I moved to the United States 15 years ago. I spent most of my career working with software companies, and honestly, I never imagined I would be a children's book author. But when I moved to the United States and became a mother of two little girls, I fell in love with how fun and whimsical the holidays are here in the United States. The stories of Santa and his elves, they make you want to be a kid all over again. But unfortunately, I couldn't find an engaging tale to read to my kids about any of the Muslim holidays we celebrate. And that's what motivated me to write my book.
Well, the first one we're talking about, the Eid Moon, tell us about it, because it is beautifully, beautifully illustrated, and the story is lovely.
So each book introduces an old Muslim tradition in a simple way to help make the holidays fun. And with Looking for the Eid Moon, it is inspired by the tradition of sighting the crescent moon. Because Muslims, they follow the lunar calendar, they rely on the shape of the moon to mark important holidays and dates. And that's where the inspiration came from. We started adopting this tradition, and every year before the holidays, my husband and I, we would take our girls on a little quest to find the moon. But the crescent moon is very hard to spot. Usually there are moon sighting committees that are responsible for this job. So like Sarah, the protagonist of the story, I began placing our very own glow-in-the-dark moon rocks around the house and the backyard. Each rock is filled with coins because during Eid, children are gifted money to buy a toy they really want. And we found our moon rock hunt to be fun, just a fun alternative for kids who are too young to understand the value of money, and a great way to keep their spirits high if they don't spot the moon.
Well, the illustrations of Sarah and Lulu are so delightful. I thought they're just beautiful. It captures your girls must be really thrilled.
Yes, they are. Actually, I was so lucky. The editor, she wanted to make sure that the characters looked like my daughters, and so my oldest is a redhead, and my little one has brown hair, so they look like those characters.
Well, that's what I figured that was what you did, because that's what you should do. Because boy, oh boy, when mom becomes a writer, you know, it's fun that she's doing all this computer stuff, but boy, she can write a lovely story that this is something that they will treasure all of their lives. And so many of the readers, the kids who read this book will also be just delighted with the illustrations and the joyousness of the entire book.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. Thank you.
And having myself been involved and seeing celebrations of Nowruz when I was living in Iran, I can tell you that it is a wonderful thing for children, and they have lots of fun. And I just got such a kick out of the girls. And I realized right away what I said. I said, I'm sure asked the illustrator to make the girls look like her girls. So I got a kick out of that. And the story is, so how did you, when did you first get the idea that, that you could actually put the words, because it's not easy to write a children's book. People don't realize that you have really so little, you have 32 pages, you have to really cut the words down. It's sometimes it's easier to write a lot of words than a few words, isn't it?
It is, actually. I think I started this journey because I was very naive, and I had no previous knowledge about the publishing industry. Thought it would be an easy process. But I'm very fortunate because I really, truly had the support and the help of a lot of wonderful people along the way. I truly believe it's also about being at the right, meeting the right people at the right time. And I love this quote from The Alchemist that says, when you want something, the whole universe conspires in order for you to achieve it. And that's how I feel with my books. I had the idea, but I had the support and help of a lot of people to make them come to life.
Because there are so many people who are writing, try to get published, but you accomplished something really great here, and it's Sleeping Bear Press, right?
Yes.
They've done just a terrific job with this, because it's, you also have high production values, you have, this kind of illustration, as I said, it's really beautifully done. She's a true artist, and so I was really happy to see Sandra's work. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, and how fun is that her last name has the word Eid in it as well. She's not even Muslim, but
I noticed that, and I thought, when I saw that, I said, What? Because she's not, but she certainly captured it, and I thought that was wonderful. And she's very, very talented. So that worked out perfectly for that book. And then, of course, your next book, again, it's always people don't realize it. So the process, explain to people, you write the words, and then somebody has to take your words and bring them to life, right?
Yes, which is not an easy process. And usually authors and illustrators do not communicate with each other. Authors don't pick the illustrators. It's the editor that does. And again, I was just so lucky because both books, the editors, they picked amazing illustrators. I'm so fortunate that they even agreed to illustrate these books.
Exactly. It's not easy. And when you write a children's book and you've written the words, you're not sure if somebody will actually bring them to life. And both of the illustrators, they're completely different styles. And the one for the second book, which I really enjoy the illustrations too, very clever illustrations. And these ones are done by Dinara Mirta Lapova.
Mirta Lapova, that's correct. Yes.
And again, excellent. She's captured your words and turned them into lovely, lovely illustrations.
So Dinara, she's an award-winning illustrator. And she has illustrated lots of children books, and she's just beyond incredible. She's also half Christian, half Muslim, and I think I didn't need to communicate with her because she had the same vision. She knew exactly what to do with this book, and she did a marvelous job.
And again, a story that I'm sure you know, so much of it comes from also from your past, from your childhood.
Yes. So the Ramadan drummer is inspired by, again, it's a very old Muslim tradition. It's inspired by drummers who used to stroll the streets before sunrise during the month of Ramadan to wake people up for their last meal before fast. This tradition stopped to exist because now people just set their alarm clocks. I remember when I was young and my mom used to tell me stories about the drummer that used to stroll the streets of Damascus in Syria. I was disappointed that there were no drummers where I lived, and I was always curious about this man that's walking the streets alone in the dark, beating his drum to wake up people before fast. And many years later, I turned it into a story.
Well, I think you've done a wonderful job. I think it's just fantastic, and I'm so happy that you got published and found a really great publisher in this book too. And this one is by Raycraft, right? Raycraft.
That's correct.
Yeah. So you've been very, very fortunate, and your idea of writing children's books to inspire and to bring to life old traditions, I think it's fantastic. And are you working on another book? Because I'm sure. Well, this is what happens when the reason I call this program, you know, I'm going to be celebrating the 9th anniversary of Joy on Paper in a few weeks. And when I named this program, I called it Joy on Paper, first because of the joy of writing, but also the joy of reading. And then I know that what happens when people start writing, they can't give it up. Once you see your words on paper, you just can't give it up, right?
Yes, that's true. I am working on a couple other projects. One that I'm really excited about, I'm co-authoring with author Eileen Meyer, and she's also a published author. And that's also, it hits on diversity, but it's also about how, as Americans, we're all from different backgrounds, but we all are united by our love for our country. And, you know, so even though we have different backgrounds and we have different faiths, we all have that same love for America and for being here.
Well, I look forward to that. I'm sure that when it comes out, you'll contact me and let me know the release date. And as I said, I think the writing is the best addiction because it really keeps you busy and makes you...
It does.
You know, and of course, something for your family. They must be so very, very proud of you.
It does. It really does. It came handy during the pandemic, I can tell you that.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. I think you've done a beautiful job with this story, and I look forward to having you back when you have another story to tell. And again, it's Satine Abaza, and it's Looking for the Aid Moon, and then also the Ramadan Drummer. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much, Patsy. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow. Beautiful. I love children's books. I love them. I have children's books around me all the time because, you know, it's so funny. I think what happens when you have so many times, people will just toss out their children's books or their own kids' books. And I haven't, you know, I pared it down because in our family's case, when we're talking about paring down, we're paring down from, I pared down once from 6,000 books to 3,000 books. Well, 6,432 books to be exact. And I pared it down to 3,000 that... that fit into a U-Haul, and that's all that would fit, so that's all I took. Just to keep some of them, always to keep some of them, kids, you know, kid. When I say kid, your kid can be 25 years old, and suddenly you pull out one of his books from when he was a little baby, and one that you read over and over, and they get a kick out of it. So this is the kind of thing that you should do. And I'm really, again, if you are, you know, if you've got, everybody's tight about money, it's a little difficult, you know, to ask people to do anything. But if you have some extra money, do buy a book, a children's book. You could buy one of these books that I talked about today, or all of the other children's books that I talk about, including Devon Miller, who does our book buzzes, and he has a series called Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. And these books are lovely. You can buy them and have them, you can order them on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble online and have them sent directly to a children's hospital of your choice, one in your own town, or if you don't have a children's hospital in your town, do it to St. Jude's or Shriners Hospitals for Children and send one book, two books, send 10 books, and you can do it in somebody's name. And the children in hospital need books. I can't tell you, until you see a kid in a hospital getting a new book, when I talk about joy, that's pure joy. They really need them. And since the pandemic, before the pandemic, they used to share books. But even now, I recently talked to a nurse, and they still are not sharing books in hospitals because just they're more worried than they used to be. And in the old days, they used to have, actually, the nurse I was talking to, she said they had a bunny cart, and it was, looked like a bunny, and it was filled with books, and they could go from room to room, and the kids could select the books that they wanted, but they don't do that anymore. So books are when they get books, they give them to one child, and that child keeps that book. So if you have some time and energy and want to do a good deed, please buy a book, a children's book. Just go online and send a book or two or three and to a children's hospital. It'll make you feel good. because that's one of the things that we have to do. We have to be encouraging, and we have to engage, and we have to enjoy life. And so that's why I hope that you will listen to that. And then please, oh, do get this wonderful zine. You know, sometimes you get such a kick out of a book. You know, I just love it. I get crazy about books. I get crazy about books. You think after all of this time, I would get so excited. I get so excited. And so I do hope that you will do that. And I wanted, I got notice from Carol J. Perry today that she just finished her next book in the her wonderful Witch City Mystery series. And it is called Death Scene. And it is going to be it's going to be terrific. I'm so excited whenever she has a new book coming out. And she's going to be on the program, and we're going to be talking to her soon about that, because we have lots of news coming up for the 9th anniversary of Joy on Paper. And I hope that you will listen in next week. I'm going to be talking more about that. And also, Bill Larson is going to be on the week after, and he is looking for more intellectual property questions. So if you have a question about intellectual property or trademarks, that's particularly if you've written a children's book and you have a character you want to trademark, this is the time to send in a question. And Bill Larson, our legal eagle, will be happy to set you in the right direction and to remind you to be careful, as I always do, be careful of all the scams that they are sending out to writers. They do not buy your book. Hollywood doesn't buy your book just online. They don't send you a message, we want to buy your book. So send us your whole manuscript and we will look at it and decide if we want to buy it, because that's a scam. That's a scam. What can I say, people? It's a scam. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you for everything, and you are wonderful. And everybody, I have some big news next week. 9th anniversary, can you believe it? 9 years behind the microphone. I love it. I love it. And Big Ed saluting me, I'm saluting him. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, a glorious weekend, reading a book under a tree. That's the most lovely thing you can do. Or perhaps on the beach. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye now.